All right, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the top of Lamed Aleph. Lamed Aleph. The Mishnah says, "Shnei kadarin shayu mahalchin ze achar ze." You have two individuals who are transporting kadarim. These are potters. They're transporting some sort of earthenware utensils. Ze v'nitzkala rishon. The first one trips v'nafal, and he falls over. V'nitzkala sheni v'rishon, and then the guy who is following after him falls over him, trips over him. Harishon chayav. First one is responsible for the damages or the problems that arise for the second one. Now we have to understand what's happening here. Why is the first one responsible over here? So Amar Rav Yochanan, lo tema matnitan Rabbi Meir. Don't assume that our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. We quoted this back on Chavtet, this qualification of Rabbi Yochanan. So don't assume that our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, damar nitkal posheihu, that a person who trips is negligent. V'chayav. And that's the reason your first one is chayav, or responsible for that which happens to the second individual, because he is a posheya, and his pshia is what caused the difficulty or the problem for the second individual. So that would have been the easiest way to explain it, is just assume that Rabbi Meir is the author of this Mishnah. But Rabbi Yochanan says you don't have to say that. Ela filu lirabanan, damrei anusu. Even according to Rabbanan, who say that an individual who trips, it's an accident, and you won't hold them responsible for that upator. Normally, we would say that he's pator. Halcha chayav. In this instance, he will be held liable. Shehelo la'amod v'lo amad. He had sufficient time to get up, and he didn't take advantage of that time to get up, and he stayed on the ground, or he didn't clear up the mess that he made from tripping over. So what Rabbi Yochanan says is that even according to the Chachamim that say that a person who trips is considered to be an accident, and you are not liable for that. Nevertheless, if after you've tripped, and after the accident has happened, you don't clear up, or you don't get up in a sufficient or reasonable amount of time, then you are liable, not because you tripped, but simply because you never got up, and you didn't clear out of the way after the accident had happened. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak amar, afilu teima lo yalo la'amot. Even if he didn't have the opportunity to stand up, hayalo lahazir. He should have warned the guy behind him. Below, he's here. And he didn't give that warning. That's the law in Israel and other places as well, that if you pull over in a location or a place where it's dangerous or it's generally illegal because something unforeseen or accidental happened, nevertheless, you have to provide sufficient warning for the people behind you to know that you're there. So you have to put out the reflective triangle. You have to wear vests. All of the requirements, because yes, we understand and we accept that there was something out of your control that happened. But once it's happened already, then you should take the proper precautions to warn the people behind you or that are approaching that there is an issue over here. So that's what Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, that even in a case where you don't have sufficient opportunity to stand, you still have the opportunity to warn the people behind you to watch out or be careful. Rav Yochanan Amar, given to Loyalo La'amod, Loyalo La'azir. Rabbi Yochanan says the two are correlated. If he is so busy and so involved with clearing up or getting up from the accident, then he's also too preoccupied to warn the people behind him. So Rabbi Yochanan sees that as a sufficient excuse for not warning the people behind you because of the fact that you're tarud, you're dealing with the accident itself. And since you were involved in the accident itself, if you didn't have sufficient time to get up, you also are not of a clear mind to warn the people behind you. On the other hand, Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, listen, as far as getting up, I understand it takes time to clean up, it takes time. But just to simply say something to the people behind you and warn them, then we will have expectations of you to do that. So what the qualification of Rav Yochanan says is that not only is this Mishnah true according to Rabbi Meir, who says Nitkal Pushehu, it's even true according to the Chachamim, who say that nitkal is an anusu, that it is considered to be an accident, but there are times that even when you trip and it's an accident, you will reach a point where you will be responsible for that which is happening. According to Rabbi Yochanan, that is after you've had sufficient time to get up and you don't get up. According to Rabbi Nachman Yitzchak, is if you didn't warn the people behind you, when you had the opportunity to warn them and you didn't warn them, you will be held liable in that case. Tanan. So this is the upcoming Mishnah. Haya bal korah rishon, bal chavit acharon. You have a person walking with a beam in front, and you have a person walking with a pitcher, a barrel behind. Nishbra chavit bikorah patur. If the person behind smashes into the korah, then the bala korah is patur. because, as we know, the general rule is that when you're behind and you're in back, you're the one who's responsible for any interaction that happens between you. You need to be careful and watch what the person in front of you is doing. And therefore, here, where the Bala Kora is walking normally, acting normally in the Rishut Rabim, and the person behind him, Boat HaChavit, walks in or speeds up and bangs into his Kora, then the person behind is the one that's the responsible party, and therefore the Bala Kora is patur. On the other hand, V'yamad Bala Kora Chayav. The Bala Kora stops in the Rishut Rabim, and his stopping in the Rishut Rabim causes the Bala HaChavit behind him to smash into the Kora, then he is responsible for that behavior. My love, what is this case where he stopped in the Rishut Rabim? Shamad likatef. He stood to shift the load or to reorient the load on his shoulder to make it easier for him to carry. So even though it is orchehu, it's a normal behavior of this individual in the Rishut Rabim, viktani chayav. And yet the Mishnah still holds him responsible for the fact that he didn't do something over here. He stopped to shift the load, to fix the load on him. And yet we still say that he's liable, probably, the Havaleli has here, that he should have warned the person behind him. Since he didn't warn the person behind him, we hold him responsible. And this sounds exactly like Rav Nachman by Yitzchak, that over here, where he's fixing the load, even though he has reasonable rights to do what he's doing, because he's acting normally, and it's normal for people carrying heavy loads to stop a little bit, to shift the loads, to move around, despite that fact, we expect you, when you stop in the Rishut Rabim, to warn the people behind you that you're going to stop. If that's the case, that sounds like Rav Nachman and Yitzchak, and it's a problem for Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan says when you're preoccupied, that you do not have to give a warning to the people behind you. So Mar says, lo, kisha amad lafush. It's not a case where he stopped to shift the load. Rather, he stopped to rest. He took a pit stop in the middle of the Rishut Rabim. So here, you do not have necessarily permission to do this, because that's not okay. That's not normal behavior in the Rishut Rabim. We expect you in the Rishut Rabim to do things that are considered to be normal or proper usage of the Rishut Rabim. That's to transport. That's to shift the load around. If you want to take a pit stop, you want to get off at the rest area, then you got to leave the main road. You got to pull over to the side. You can't just stop in the middle of the Rishut Rabim and expect everybody else to be okay with that. And since you did something unusual, that's why you are liable over here. Aval amadakatef mai. But, based on what you're saying now, had he stopped to shift the load, what would have been the din? Patur. Then you would not have been chayav, or the Bala Kora would not be chayav for that, because that's normal behavior. Now, the question is, why does it make a difference? Meaning that, as far as the person behind you is concerned, in both instances, you stopped. Whether you stop to shift the load or whether you stop to rest, you stop. And how does the person behind you know what's going on? And in both cases, that short stop is what caused the person behind you to bump into you and smash the barrel into your Kora. So the Balei HaTosafot, based on the question that I'm posing, suggests that there is reason to believe that the person behind can tell what the person in front is doing. I mean, that they can see, based on the way that they are moving or the way that they're acting, that they are either mikatef, that they are shifting the load, or they are lafush, they are resting. And that's what the Balei HaTosafot say, Ishlamar de minkar shapi, or im ome lafush or the katef. It is obvious to the party behind as to what or the type of behavior that is going on, what to expect over here. And based on the explanation of the Mishnah on tomorrow's daf, the Balei HaTosafot say that it's a case where he's spreading himself out, he's shifting himself across the whole Rishut Rabim. So in a case of Lekatef, in a case where he's shifting the load around, the person behind can expect that type of behavior. If you're going to move your load around, you're going to need a lot of room to do it, and we'd expect you to be spread all over the place, and he has to take precautions. On the other hand, if you just stop to rest, then in that case, we don't expect you to be spread out all over the Rishut Rabim. And then when you made that sudden stop and you are spread across the whole Rishut Rabim, we're going to make you responsible because that's not behavior that the person behind can expect. So in essence, what is being said here is that in the modern day parlance is you have indicator lights, you have brake lights. You need to give information or feedback to the people behind you so that they know what you are doing, so that they don't have to guess and they don't have to intuit what you're trying to do. So that's what's being said here. If it's obvious to the person behind what you're doing, or they have fair expectations as to what's going to happen, then over there you're not going to be responsible, because the person behind should have understood and made or taken the proper precautions to not bump into you. On the other hand, if you give no warning or you do things that are unusual, then the person behind you can't be held responsible because he doesn't know what to expect or he doesn't know how to deal with what you are doing. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Hananel, as opposed to the Balei Tosafot, suggests that the difference between Lekatef and Lefush is not like the Balei Tosafot suggests over here, that there's a difference and it's something that the person behind could note, but rather it simply has to do with, are you preoccupied or not? In the case of Lekatef, you are preoccupied with shifting the load around. Because of that, you can't warn the people behind you, you can't give them feedback, so therefore we don't hold you responsible because you're just preoccupied with dealing with the load. On the other hand, Lafush, if you simply stop to rest, then you're not tarid, you're not preoccupied. If that's the case, then we place a larger obligation on you to warn the people behind you. And the fact that you didn't warn them is going to make you liable for that which happens. Now the Gemara says, based on the distinction that you're drawing now with regards to how he stops, if he's not stopping to shift the load or stopping to rest, Adotani Seifa, in the Seifa of the Mishnah, it says, V'yamar lo bala chavit amod, v'yamar lo bala chavit amod, Patur. If the Bala Korah told the guy behind him to stop, and he still kept going forward and smashed his barrel into the beam, then you are Patur, because you gave sufficient warning to the individual behind you. The fact that he didn't pay heed becomes his problem. The Gemara says, you could have made a finer distinction in the Mishnah. Rather than saying that the case where you are Chayav is the case where you just stopped, and the case where you're Patur is where you warn the individual behind, you could have made a finer distinction even in stopping. You could say sometimes when you stop, you're chayav, sometimes when you stop, you're patur. Bamed varim amurim kisham ad lafush. You're chayav in a case where you stop to rest. Aval amad katev, if you stop to shift around the load, then you'd be patur. And that'd be a finer distinction to draw in the Mishnah. Where it says, no, hakamash malan. Da'af agav da'amad lafush. The Mishnah is teaching you that despite the fact that you stopped to rest, Ki amar lo bala chavit amod patur, that warning the person behind you is sufficient in that case. Even though to stop, to rest in the Rishut HaRabim isn't necessarily normal behavior, and isn't something that the person has to expect, but if you warn the individual behind you, that's sufficient, and you'll be patur in that case, despite the fact that normally people don't take rests or stop in the Rishut HaRabim. So that's the chiddush of the Mishnah. Not coming to contrast the cases, but rather teach you the bigger chiddush, which is that when you stop to rest, you still have a way to protect yourself by warning the individuals behind you. So tashma hakadarin vazagagin sheyumachim zeacher zeh. You have individuals, potters and glass makers that are walking one after the other. Nitkala rishon, the first one trips, v'nafal, and he's on the ground. Nitkala sheni v'rishon, and the second guy trips over the first guy. And he's on the ground. Vashlishi b'sheni. Then the third guy comes and trips over the second one. You have a pileup on the highway. Rishon chayav b'nizke sheni. The first individual is responsible to the damage that happened to number two. B'sheni chayav b'nizke shlishi. And the number two is responsible for the damage that happened to number three. V'imachmat rishon naflu. If they all fell because of the first one, the pileup happened because of the behavior of the first party, Rishon chayav b'nizkei kulan. Then the first one is responsible for all the problems that arose. B'miziru zedzeh turim. And if they warn each other, meaning that whatever happened, they warn the party behind them and tell them to be careful, then you are patur. My love, what is the case over here? Shelo haya lehen la'amod. That it was a case where they didn't have sufficient time to get up. And despite that fact, it says here that if you warn the people behind you, then you are patur. So you see here that there isn't necessarily a correlation between the ability to get up and the warning of the people behind you. Again, supportive of Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's position and a problem for Rabbi Yochanan. It says, no, shayeh lehem la'amod, that they had sufficient time to get up. So Gemara says, avalo yalehem la'amod, mai. If they didn't have sufficient time to get up, then what would be the din? Patur. In Ochanami, they'd be patur. Gemara says, yehochi adatani seifa. Then, again here, instead of writing in the Seifa, he zero zedzeh patur, like we saw, that if they warn each other, you are patur, make a finer distinction here within the Breita, within the falling on the ground without any warnings. Simply the amount of time that has elapsed will make a difference as to whether you're chayav or patur. When are you chayav? When you had the ability or the sufficient time to get up and get out of the way. But in a case where they had no ability to get up or they didn't have sufficient time to get up, then they would be patur. And again, that would be a finer distinction that you could draw here, rather than saying that the cases, one case is where they had sufficient time to get up, and the other case is a case where they warned them. Again, the Gemara says, HaKamash Malan, Da'afagav Da'elan Namud. So here again, the Gemara says that the Chiddush here is that even though you had the ability to get up, and even though you had the ability to vacate the area, Kihi Ziru Zed Zip Turim, if you give a warning to the people behind you, that is sufficient. So once again here, what the Chiddush that is being brought by the Mishnah before, and now with this Braita, is that warning can overcome what otherwise would be a deficit or a liability for you. In the case of the Mishnah, you would be held liable if you stopped to rest, because that's not normal behavior. Warning the people behind you can overcome that problem. Similarly over here, if you had sufficient time to remove yourself from the Reshut HaRabim or to clean up the mess in the Reshut HaRabim, and you didn't, which would make you liable, if you warn the people behind you, that will grant you an exemption over here. And that's the Chiddush, and that's why the Mishnah and the Braita didn't give you this finer distinction, because it wanted to teach you this latter point, which is that when you warn, that's enough to overcome all the other problems. So now the Gemara goes back to explain this case, and this is where it gets a little more complex. It's not so complex, but it just, there are two ways to learn this Gemara. The Rashi brings the two Lishonot, the Baya Tosafot deal with the two Lishonot. The second Lashon is really the Lashon of the Rabbeinu Hananel. The first Lashon is the Lashon that majority of the Rishonim follow. And I'm going to explain the Gemara based on that Lashon first, and then we'll come back and explain it in the alternate version. So, Amar Rava, Rishon Chayav Benizke Sheni, Ben Benizke Gufo, Ben Benizke Mimono. And when it comes to the first individual who fell over, this is from the case in the Braita where we had one person fell, the second one fell on him, and then the third one fell on number two, the responsibility of each party to the party behind them. So the first individual, he's Chayav Benizke Sheni, he's responsible that which happens to the Sheni, Ben Benizke Gufo, Ben Benizke Mimono. Doesn't matter if the damage is done by his guf, or whether the damage is done by his mamon. On the other hand, Sheni Chayav Benizke Shlishi, the second guy is responsible for the damage that happens to the third party, Benizke Gufo, that if his body is the damaging agent, Avalo Benizke Mimono, but not if his monetary items did the damaging over here. So now, the explanation is, and let's understand, the first guy falls on the ground. When he falls on the ground, we're assuming here, this is Lashitat Rabbi Meir, that Nitkal Posheyahu, and since when he fell on the ground, he's a Posheya, if an individual now comes and trips over his body itself, then the first guy is responsible because he is a Posheya. He fell down, he's a Posheya, he's an Adama Mazik, and since he's an Adama Mazik, he'll be responsible for any damage done by his goof, by his body. Anybody trips over it, or anything that happens because of his body being on the ground, he will be responsible for. In addition to that, he's not only responsible for his own body, he's responsible for his possessions. If his possessions fell, cracked, or whatever happened to them when he tripped, those are items that were dispersed or distributed over the Reshut HaRabim because he was a Posheya. Because he was negligent in falling. Since he's a Posheya Benitkal, he is responsible for whatever happens there because, we saw this already in the previous daf, that you cannot be mafkir nezakav. You cannot be mafkir your items in the Reshut HaRabim after, or if it came about, through a pshia. So over here, the Rishon is responsible both for injuries that come about because of his body, as well as injuries that come about from his possessions. Number two, who fell over number one, the din will be slightly different. And that's what Rava points out. That for number two, the items, if something happens or somebody trips over his body, over he himself, he will be responsible for that because he's an Adama Mazik. And just like number one was a Posheya when he fell over, and therefore he's deemed to be an Adama Mazik and responsible for any damages or injuries that come about from his body, number two is in the same predicament for slightly different reason. He's not as big as a Posheya as the first guy. The first guy who tripped is clearly a Posheya. The second guy who tripped may not be as much a Posheya because he was caused to trip by the first guy tripping. But nevertheless, what we're going to assume here is that he had time to get up. Shehad lo lamod v'lo amad. He had sufficient time to get up, and he didn't get up. And therefore, number two, if his body's on the ground and causes damage to number three through his body, he would be responsible. On the other hand, the possessions of number two that are on the ground or smashed because of his tripping over here, he will not be responsible for damages that happen because of that. Because he is going to say, we're going to see this in 1 second, Hibira lavana karite. I did not create this boar. I was, in some senses, a little more of an onus than the first guy. And we learned before that mafkir ner zakav, a person who relinquishes ownership over his possessions after a nefilat onus, that is fine. So over here, because he fell, not necessarily because of his negligence, but because of the first guy's negligence, therefore, as far as he is concerned, he's still an adama mazik because he had sufficient time to get up and he didn't get up. On the other hand, with regards to his possessions, the reason his possessions are dispersed and distributed all over the Rishut HaRabim and broken and so on and so forth is because of the first guy's pshia, not because of him. He's in essence an ones with regards to that. And we know a mafkin is a chav achrei nefilat ones is patur. And therefore number two will be patur from any responsibility with regards to his possessions if number three is damages by the possessions of number two. So again, that's what Rava said over here, that Rishon chayav benizke sheni, Rishon is responsible for any damage that happens to number two, Beminizke Gufo, whether the damage was caused by the goof, the body of number one, Beminizke Mamano, or whether the damage was caused by the possessions of number one. Sheni, number two, after he's fallen, is Chaya Beniske Shlishi, he is responsible for the damage that happens to number three, Beniske Gufo, when the damage is precipitated by his body itself. Avalo Beniske Mamano. On the other hand, if the damage to number three comes about because of number two's possessions, over there, he will not be responsible. Now the Gemara says, Mimanov Shach, let us understand. Initkal Posheyahu, if tripping is considered to be negligence, Sheni Nami Lichayev, then number two should have the same din, because negligence is negligence. If number one is negligence, so is number two. Initkal La Posheyahu, on the other hand, if tripping is simply accidental, Afilu Sheyon Nami Lipater, then why is number one responsible or chayav over here? Both of them should be exempted, number one and number two, because they are ones. They happen by accident. So they both should have the same din. So the Gemara answers, Rishon vadai posheyahu. Number one is certainly negligent because he fell without anything precipitating his falling. He just tripped in the Rishut HaRabim. Sheni, agufo michayev, tehelo lamod v'lo amad. Number two is not considered to be a posheya over here because he didn't just trip over the ground. He didn't just fall over. It was precipitated by the first guy being there. But why is he responsible, or why is he chayab over here? And that's what we explained before. Hayelo lamod v'lo amad. He had sufficient time to get up after he fell, and he didn't do so. Amimono, number two, when his possessions are all over the ground, and somebody's gonna trip, number three trips over them or gets injured by them, patur, damalei, haibira, lavana, kirite. That boar, I did not dig. Or, in essence, this is, mafkir nizakav, acharei nefilat ones. He can relinquish his ownership after falling because he was not negligent in his falling. And so since he can disown these items, he's not going to be responsible for the damages that happened because we assume that he has disowned them since they are laying in shards or in pieces all over the Rishut HaRabim. You're allowed to be mafkiri nezakav if you were a ones, but not if you're a posheya. And so therefore, the number two has this dispensation. Number one does not have this dispensation. The other Gemara says, Meitave kulan chayavin al nizkei gufan upturin al nizkei mimonan. We have a braita here that seemingly suggests that there's a consistency in the responsibilities of party number one and party number two, which is that with regards to Niske Gufan, with regards to the damage done by their body, both of them are Chayavin. Ubdurim on Niske Momona. And both number one and number two are Patur with regards to the damage done by their possessions or their property. So now this would be inconsistent with what we just said or what Rava just said. Because Rava is saying that there is a distinction. That Rava says number one is responsible for Gufo and his Mimono that do damage. Whereas number two is only responsible for his Gufo that does damage, but not for his Mimono that does damage. Over here, the Brekta seemingly indicates that there is a consistency And that for both of them, they're responsible for damage done by their goof, number one and number two. And number one and number two are patur with regards to their possessions doing damage. So that would go against the explanation or make untenable the explanation that we just saw from Rava. Now Rashi over here makes a claim or it says that you can't explain that the Braita is according to the opinion that says Nitkal Anusu. That would be the easiest way to solve this problem and say that Rava is explaining the Braita that is according to Rabbi Meir who says Nitkal Pusheyahu. On the other hand, this Braita that says that number one and number two have the same din is according to the Chachamim who say that Nitkal Anusu. And that would be the easiest way to answer this question. Rashi, you can see it towards the end of the narrow lines of Rashi. For the second to last of the narrow lines, he says, "V'kasava Rava, the Rabbanon lo palig alei the Rabbi Meir. The Rabbanon don't really argue on Rabbi Meir. Benitkal posheyahu, they agree that a nitkal is a posheya, just like Rabbi Meir. Kuduuki le'el Abaye b'tarte plige. Abaye before said there's a machloke between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir with regards to two issues. One issue is whether nitkal posheyahu or not. The second issue is are you allowed to be mafkir nizakav after falling down? So here, what Rashi claims is that Rava argues on that position of Abaye. And he believes, Elaba Afkin is a Kavhu, the Plige, that the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir only argue about after the fact, whether you're allowed to be a Mafkir Nizakim or not. You trip because of your own fault from no other item that precipitated the tripping, then you are considered to be a Poshea, even according to the position of the Chachamim. So that is not so simple. As you can see here, there's a Rabbi Kiva Eger who shows that from the Gemara and Baba Metzia, it seems that that is absolutely not true, that the Chachamim never agreed to Rabbi Meir, and they believe that Nitkal Anusu. But then you're faced with the problem as to why the Gemara just didn't explain that the Braita is according to the Chachamim, and Rava is explaining the Braita that was authored by Rabbi Meir. So Tobalia Tosafot, who note Rashi's explanation over here and reject it, say that the reason that the Gemara did not give that answer, because even according to Rashi, you could still say that the Braita is authored by the Chachamim, even if they believe Nitkal Posheyu, could just simply say that if they argue about whether you'd be allowed to be Mafkir Nizakav, that would give an explanation for what the responsibilities are, or why you're Patur in this case. So Balei Tosafot say the reason the Gemara doesn't accept these types of answers is because the Gemara had a Masorah, or it was clear that both Rava and this Braita that we just brought, we're modifying the previous Braita. The original Braita that we brought, where the three individuals are walking, and the first one falls, and the second one falls on the first, and the third falls on the second, that Braita, Rav is clearly explaining that Braita. And this Braita that we just brought now, they had a Mesorah that was also explaining the previous Braita. Since they're both explaining the same Braita, you have to come up with a consistency between them. It can't just say, oh, one's authored by this individual, one's authored by that individual, because we need to reconcile between them because they're all speaking about the same incident or the same Braita. So now we're faced with a problem, which is that based on this Braita, my love, afilu l'rishon, that seems from this Braita that even number one is patur with regards to his mamon, his possessions that do damage, he'll be patur for. Or it says, no, lebar mi rishon. When it says that everybody is chayav, aniske gufan, and patur on aniske mamonan, that's with the exclusion of number one. Or it says, vaha kula muktani. That defeats the purpose of saying that all of them. If you say all of them, then that's what it means, all of them. It doesn't mean all of them with the exception of number one. Amar of Adar Barava, Kulan Hanizakin. The Kulan here is not referencing to all the parties involved. It's talking about all the parties injured over here. According to Rav Adar, Kulan is going on Nizakin. Kulan means all injured parties over here, or all parties that have been damaged. That's number two and number three. It says, hi, my. How does that make sense? Iyamai bishlama afilu rishon. If you say that it's inclusive of number one, hainu duktani kulan. That's why you use the language of kulan. Eliyamai the bar mirishon. If you're saying that kulan means everyone with the exception of number one, my kulan. Why did the Braita write kulan? Litnei hanizakin. It would have been just much easier to say Hanizakin. The fact that the Braita chose the language of Kulan and not Hanizakin shows you that it literally means Kulan. And therefore, you would have to now say that the din of number one and number two needs to be consistent. And if that's the case, we need to alter Rava's explanation of the Braita. And that's what we have now, Ella Amar Rava. And again here, whenever you use the word Ella in the Gemara, that means we rejected what we said before. And now we're going to offer you an alternative explanation. So, Amar Rava, Rishon Chayav, Ben Beniske Gufo, De Sheni, Ben Benizke Mimono Disheni, that number one is responsible for the damage that is done to number two, whether the damage is done to him, number two himself, or whether the damage is done to number two's possessions. On the other hand, Sheni, for number two, is Chayav Benizke Shlishi. He's responsible for the damage that happens to number three himself, Benizke Gufo, to him himself, Avalo Benizke Mimono, but not through the possessions of number three. So, two assumptions here, and this is the way that Rav is explaining now what the Braita said before, which is that, in this instance, everybody agrees that Mimono, whether it's the Mamon, the possessions of number one, whether it's the Mamon of number two, his possessions, you are Patur. Your Mamon, any possessions of yours that are on the ground, you are Patur. Underlying that assumption is that the Nitkal is not the Poshea. The person who trips is not really a Poshea, or he's not a full-fledged Poshea. And therefore, he's allowed to be Mafkir in his Zakav. He can relinquish ownership or control over those items. And that's exactly what happens. Number one, because he's not a complete Poshea, he is Ones in some way or not considered to be negligent over here. Therefore, his possessions or his money, we say, is relinquished control, and he's Patur the Gamre. He won't be responsible for any damage or anything that happens with them. And number two has that same claim. The difference between number one and number two is when their goof itself does damage. So what Rava says is that's the difference. Number one, when he falls on the ground, and then number two is injured by number one, or number two's possessions are damaged by number one being on the ground, number one is responsible for that because he's considered Adama Mazik. Number one is on the ground, has classified as an Adama Mazik. On the other hand, number two, who trips over him, and then lands on the ground, his body now that's on the ground that causes damage to number three, whether it's to three himself or to his possessions, over there, number two is going to be classified as a boar. He's the equivalent of an obstacle that dropped into the Reshut HaRabim. And so now that he's a boar Reshut HaRabim, a boar Reshut HaRabim is chayav for Nizakin, but is not chayav for Kelim. So that's why if he damages number three himself, he's responsible. Adam is only excluded from boar biktala if he's killed. But if an Adam is damaged by a boar, you are responsible. So over here, number two is classified as a boar. He'll be responsible for any damage that happens to number three. On the other hand, with regards to the possessions of number three, he'll be patur. Because boar is patur, me dinei kelim, or me nezek, that happens to kelim. So now that's Rava's alternate explanation of the previous Braita. That will also accord with the second Braita that we brought, because now you have a consistent din, which is that by Kelim, by the possessions of number one and the possessions of number two, you're always Patur. With regards to the goof of number one and the goof of number two, you're always Chayav. Now, it might be that there's a nuance or a difference between them, that number one is Chayav for everything, and number two is only Chayav for Nezek done to the other parties, to another Adam and not to Kelim, but both of them are Chayav there, and Patur by Mamon. And now we've solved the problem. The Gemara says, why is this true? My Tama, Davale Bor. Because number two, when he lands on the ground and his body's on the ground, he's classified as a boar. There's no such thing as a boar where you're responsible for damage that happens to Kelim or to the possessions of the other individual. The Gemara says, that explanation is all good according to Hanichal de Shmuel. The Marko Takala, Bor Hu. Because Shmuel's of the opinion that whether you're mafkir the item or whether you retain ownership over the item, it's classified as boar b'shut rabim. Over here, we're classifying number two, who's on the ground and fell on the ground, and his body as being a boar. Now, it's clear here that he can't disown himself. So it says, we're not talking about a case of hefker, we're talking about a case where he still owns himself. If that's the case, he will only be classified as a boar, according to Shmuel, who thinks that you can be a boar whether you are mafkirit or whether you own it. Elodurav, damar iafkere in ilolo. According to Rav, who says only if you disown the item does it have a classification of boar, but if you don't disown it, then it's not a boar, it's a shor, then this Ma'ika LeMeimar, this whole distinction that Rav made doesn't exist. Because according to Rav, when you don't disown the item, you're like shor. And that means that both number one, whose goof was on the ground, and number two, whose goof on the ground, they're both considered to be Adama Mazik, or shor, they'll be Chayav, for damage is done to the other party, plus the possessions of the other party. And then there's no distinction between number one and number two. And that defeats the qualification that Rava made, that there is such a distinction between the responsibilities and the culpability of number one and the culpability of number two. So Gemara says, Zolam Kedamar Mikara. Going back to the original assumption. The original assumption is that there's a difference between one and two with regards to their possessions. Both of them, when they're on the ground, they're goof that does damage. They're responsible for everything. They're classified as Adama Mazik. Number one, when he's on the ground, he's an Adama Mazik. And therefore, he is responsible for any damage that comes about from that, whether it hurts number two by physically himself or it hurts his possessions. He is responsible as Adama Mazik because he's Nitkal Posheo. Number two is considered Adama Mazik, not because he's Nitkal Posheo, because he didn't trip over the ground. He tripped over the guy in front of him, and he's less responsible or less negligent in that case. Nevertheless, he's considered to be Adama Mazik, Shehala Lomod Velo Amad. He had the possibility or sufficient time to get up, and he didn't take advantage of it. So therefore, he's also a Posheya. So number two on the ground, when number three comes and is injured by him, or his possessions are damaged by number two being on the ground, he's responsible for both of those. On the other hand, Mamon, there will be a distinction. The Mamon of number one will be classified as a bor, because it was Nitkal Posheyahu, and it's a Nefilat Nizakav Achrei Davar Shel Pshia. In that case, he doesn't have a right to relinquish ownership over it. So it'll be like a bor, and it'll be responsible for damages done to the person of number two, but not to the Kelim of number two. On the other hand, number two's possessions that are on the ground, he can relinquish ownership over them. He can be mafkir nizakav, because his nefilah, his falling, is classified as an ones. Since he's an ones, he can relinquish control, and he have no responsibility for his possession. But the kashala, the whole reason that we backed away from this explanation was because of the problem of the braita that said kulan chayavin, that said by the individuals, they are all chayavin, and they are all pturim, meaning that by gufan, kulan, chayavim, that we've solved already. Both of them are considered adama mazik, that we're fine with. But the second half of the parashah that says, by mamon, kulan, pturim, that's not true. Number one's possessions are considered to be a bor, and he's responsible for them. Number two's possessions are mafkir nizakav, achrei nifilat ones. They're nothing, he's not responsible, he's patur. So then how are you going to say that that reconciles with the brayta who says that both of them are patur? So tergama ravada bar yumei, Kamei Duravina Shahusku Kelim Bikelim. That's a case of Kelim. Meaning that when utensils are damaged by the utensils, you're patur both by number one and number two. The reason being, as I just explained before, number one's possessions when they're on the ground and smashed on the ground, they have a classification of boar. Classification of boar tells you the rule is that Shor Velo Adam, Chamor Velo Kelim, possessions that are damaged by those possessions would be patur, he's patur from, because they have a din of bor. Number two's possessions that are on the ground, he's not responsible for it, not because they're bor, but simply because he was mafkir nizakav, the achar nefilat ones, which he's entitled to do, and therefore he's not responsible for what happens. But the end result is that any possessions damaged by possessions on the ground, you will be patur for. Number one's possessions on the ground, he'll be patur if they damage number two's possessions, because it's a bor. And Boris Patur Mikelim. Number two's possessions that are on the ground, and then number three's possessions are damaged by number two's possessions, he'll be Patur, because he disowned the item. It's not even Bor, it's completely Patur from him. So that's what the Brechta is saying, that there is a case by Goof, where everyone is Chayav, that we know they're both classified as Adama Mazik, for different reasons. Number one, because he's a Posheya, because he tripped. Number two, because he's a Posheya, because he didn't get up. And in the case of your utensils, your Kelim, there are consistently patur for different reasons. Number one is patur because it's a bor, and bor is not responsible or is not liable by kelim. Number two is not responsible for utensils or items that are damaged by his possessions on the ground because he's disowned them. He's mafkir nizakav, and he has no responsibility then. So that's how we will reconcile with the braita. Now, that's the first way to explain this, and that's the way that, again, the majority of the Rishonim explain it. The alternate way to explain it basically starts in the beginning with the middle way that we explain the position of Rava. And that is that it begins with the premise as such, and again, they have to change, you'll see this in the Girsa Ot, if you look through this, that they alter the Girsa Ot slightly to fit. There are Girsa Ot that match this explanation, but the Girsa is as such, that in the case of the first individual, he is by Gufo, we say that he is chayav, or responsible for damage that is done by gufo, because according to Rabbi Meir, nitkal posheyuhu, and you're considered to be adama mazik. According to the chachamim, he's responsible because ha'elo la'amod v'lo amad. He had the possibility of getting up and didn't get up, and therefore you're a posheya. As a posheya with your guf on the ground, you're going to be responsible for any damages that come about for that. Number two is going to be responsible, according to Rava, because his falling on the ground, when number two falling on the ground, we're going to classify him on the ground as a boor. And since he's a boor, he's going to be responsible for damage that is done by his goof as a boor. Obviously, there'll be a distinction then between whether he damages number three himself, which he'll be chayav for, or number three's possessions, which he will be patur from. But that is the distinction that is between number one and number two that is proposed by Rova in the beginning, which is that number one is considered to be Adama Mazik, and therefore in Gufo he's responsible for everything, whereas number two is considered to be a boor. His goof itself is classified as a boor. The Gemara then asks on that, wait a minute, how could it be that you're suggesting that there is such a distinction? Because if Nitkal Posheo, they should have the same din, number one and number two. And if Nitkal is an Anusu, then they should have the same din. Gemara's answer is, no, Rishon Vadai Posheo. Number one is a Poshea. He's a Nitkal Posheo, and that's why he's classified as Adama Mazik. Number two is not a full-fledged Posheya because he tripped over number one. And so therefore, it's not just a classic case of tripping. And that's why he's considered to be Anus. Why do we hold him culpable over here? Because he had time to get up, or he had time to clear it up. If he doesn't clear himself out of the way, he becomes like a boor, birshut harabim. So then the Gemara asks on that, wait a minute, how can you say that? There's no consistency over here. The Braita demands that by gufo it's consistent that you're chayav, and by kilim that it's consistent that you are patur. Now, in this explanation, the consistency within kilim is true. You're patur in those cases by both of them in terms of the kilim. The inconsistency is in gufo, which is that by gufo, according to this explanation, Rishon is chayav for every damage that's done by gufo of the Rishon. But gufo of the Sheni, you're only responsible for damage done to number three himself, but not to his possessions. The Gemara then says, okay, so we're going to explain it, that Rishon chayav, ben benizke gufo de Sheni, ben benizke bemono de Sheni, the Sheni chayav benizke shlishi benizke gufo velo benizke bemono. And therefore now, what we're going to suggest now is that they were consistent. That when it comes to the goof of number one and the goof of number two, both of them are classified as Adam HaMazik. And since they're Adam HaMazik, they're going to be responsible for any damage that's done to, from number one to number two, and from number two to number three. The difference between them is going to be about Mimono. The number one's Mamon is going to be classified as a boor, because he's a Posheya, and since he's a Posheya, his possessions that are on the ground are classified as a boor, and he can't disown them. And number two's possessions are going to be patur, because Analilkarite, I didn't dig this boor. I tripped, and it was an accident, and my items that are on the floor is all because I precipitated, or because of a ones. Therefore, I can disown them, and I won't be responsible. So now that's the interim stage. The Gemara says, wait a minute, that's Hanicha de Shmuel. That works well according to Shmuel, that says that any takala in the Rishut Rabim is considered to be a boor. But according to Rav, who says that only when the item is hefker is it considered to be a boor b'shut rabim, not when you retain ownership or possession over it, then how are you going to explain this setup now? Because in this assumption, we're assuming that not necessarily that you have to be mafgir them, but because you didn't dig the boor, you didn't create the situation, you are patur. And so because of that, it seems that you've retained ownership over your possessions, but nevertheless, number one is not exempted because he was a posheya in creating the boor, whereas number two is patur because he didn't dig the boor. It wasn't he who precipitated the problem here, it was number one, and therefore he's not going to be responsible for his possessions being on the ground as a boor. But in both those instances, you still own the items. If that's the case, that only works well for Shmuel, who says a boor can have ownership or private ownership. Or in Terav, who says only when your mafkirit does have a din of boor, we have a problem. Hello? And so now the Gemara goes back to the original explanation that we gave before, which is that when it comes to the goof of number one, you are responsible for everything that happens because you're a Adam HaMazik. When it comes to goof of number two, you are classified as a boor. And therefore, you're responsible for the goof of number three, but not the kilim of number three. As far as mamon is concerned, everybody thinks you're patur. You're not responsible for those possessions because you were not a complete posheya, or you didn't really intend for these to be borot over there. Now, reconciling with the Braita before, again, with regards to Mamon, we don't have any problem. Both Rishon and Sheni are patur for damage done by their possessions. That's consistent with the Braita. The problem we had was with regards to Gufo. By Gufo, number one is responsible for everything, but number two is only responsible for damage done to number three himself, but not to number three's possessions. That's inconsistent. So now, the Gemara, or the way that we have the answer here is, a Tergama, Ravada Bram Yumik, Hamed Ravina, Shulusku Kelim, Be Kelim, that the Kelim damaged or were damaged by other Kelim. Over here, you would have to have the Lashon, or the alternate Lashon Be, Shezik Gufon et Gufo. Meaning that it's consistent that you are Chayav when the person himself is damaged by the previous person. Number one, if number two trips over him and is damaged by that, he is responsible for that. Number two, if number three trips over number two himself, he will be responsible for that. And so now we can reconcile with that Braita in the case of Gufam. And that Shani is responsible for damage done to number three, just like number one is responsible for damage done to number two. It's true that with regards to Kelim, there is a difference between number one and number two. But that difference is not what the Braita was speaking about. The Braita is saying that with regards to Gufo, we're consistent, that you're always Chayav for damage done to another party. And with regards to Kelim, you're always patur. Within Gufo, it happens to be that Kelim will have a difference between them, but that's not what the Braita was focused on. And that's the way to explain it according to the second Lashon. Now the Gemara continues and says, what about the latter part of that Braita that says that when it's all the first guy's fault, then he's responsible for everything? Amamar, going back to that Braita, Imachmat Bishon Naflu, if it's the first guy who caused or precipitated the whole problem here, Rishon Chayav Beniske Kulam. He's responsible for all the damage done. In essence, or in truth, the first guy is responsible always. He's the one who tripped and caused this pileup over here. So why don't we always say he is responsible? How do you make it distinct or distinguish the fact that he is totally responsible versus only partially responsible? So Gemara says, Machmat Rishon Hechi Nafil. So what exactly happened over here that number one fell and was the cause of all the problems here? Rapapa Amar, the Pascha, the Orche, Keshilda. And basically, he was spread across the entire Reshut Rabim like a Shilda. Rashi says a Shilda here, the Nevela, Sheled, in the modern Hebrew is used to mean a skeleton or to mean a frame, meaning that he's just sprawled across the entire Reshut Rabim. And since he's sprawled across the whole Reshut Rabim, he's the proximate cause to everybody falling or piling up afterwards because he's spread across the entire Reshut Rabim. Zvidamar, Kechutra de Samyuta. It's like the walking cane of a blind person. So again, over here, the blind person moves the cane back and forth and back and forth. So over here, he was spread across the entire Reshut Rabim, and that's why he's responsible for everything that happened. The way that Rashi explains it, it seems that they're just giving different examples of the same thing, which is that Rav Papa and Rav Zvid don't necessarily argue. They simply are giving you different examples of what it means, or an imagery of what it means that they are sprawled across, or their reach is greater than just the location in which they're in, because they're so far spread across the Reshut Rabim. Rabbeinu Hananel gives a slightly different version or explanation here. He says, "Perish Keshilda, Kegon Shepashat Yadav Veraglav LeRochba Shel Derech." That what it means, Keshilda, means that he sticks his legs out and his arms out so that he covers the entire Reshut Rabim. Upaska Lamavar Ba'adam, and therefore he stops anybody from passing by there. The implications are that if he wasn't spread across the whole Reshut Rabim, then we would demand of the parties behind him to circumvent, to go around him, and not to trip over him. But the fact now that he's blocked the entire Reshut Rabim, there's no other way to go. And since there's no other way to go, anybody who falls over or piles up over there is the responsibility of that first party. V'chein chutra de samyuta, this staff of the blind person, Rabbeinu Hananel says, perish asumam b'gashesh b'matesh b'yado, he feels his way with the stick or the cane that he has in his hand. Heina behena. He goes back and forth and back and forth. But stadim ube'emtzai derech. From the middle to the sides to the sides. You know how a blind person works with the cane, tapping along from side to side. Similarly over here, he's spread out. So again, the Rabbeinu Hananel gives a slightly different explanation. But from the Rabbeinu Hananel, it's also not obvious that there's any difference between Rav Zvid and Rav Papa. They're just giving you two different descriptions of the same phenomenon. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot over here say that there's actually a difference, and it's a machlok between Rav Papa and Rav Zvid. And that's what the Balei HaTosafot say here, a Rav Papa polig. When Rav Zvid brings down that he's talking about a walking cane of a blind person, he's arguing on Rav Papa. The guy sprawled across the entire Rishut Rabim. He's not responsible in this case, Lishi. Shailol is the hair. Because number three should have taken caution or precautions when he saw number two fall over number one. And so because of that, number one is not responsible for number three falling because number three had sufficient warning not to fall over number one because he saw number two fall over him. Obviously, when he fell over number two, that he didn't have enough warning for. Aval b'chutra de samyuta davi v'lachson. The difference being, according to Balei Tosafot, which is that when Rav Papa says it's paskal orche, it means he was straight across the whole Rishut Rabim in a straight line. On the other hand, when you talk about the chutra de samyuta, it's on an angle. Number one is lying across the Rishut Rabim an angle. Yes, he's blocking the whole Rishut Rabim, but it's on an angle. Shnitzkal rishon b'rosh ha-chutra, oto shba acharkach, v'nitzkal b'sof ha-chutra lo ra'o. So because of the way that he's laying on a angle in the Rishut Rabim, when number one fell, and then number two trips over him, number three who's coming trips over a different part of number one, because number one is on an angle. And so he can't assess what happened to number two and then take precautions because where number two fell was not relevant to number three because number three falls in a different location because of the lachson. So according to the Balei Tosafot, there's actually a machloket here between Rav Papa and Rav Zvid as to what is the scenario in which number one is fully responsible. Rav Papa is even when you're stretched just straight across the Rishut Rabim. According to Rav Zvid, it has to be on a lachson where there isn't sufficient information being given back or feedback to number three by which he could take precaution. And that's why number one is responsible because neither number two or three could have anticipated or taken precautions here. All right, we'll just start the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Zeba b'chavito, v'zeba b'korato. So here, they're walking opposite each other. One guy's coming with his beam. The other guy's coming with his chavit. Nishbaro kado shozeh, korato shozeh. The guy with the barrel, the guy with the pitcher, smashes into the balakorah. The balakorah is patur. Shelezeh reshut alech, lezeh reshut alech. They both have permission to be in the Rishut Rabim. And since the bal achavit or the balakad knows that the balakorah has permission to be there, he's got to take proper precautions to avoid the korah that's coming towards him. And if he didn't step out of the way, didn't move around, then it's his problem because these are rights that are granted to both parties, and it's something that you could anticipate. And since you could anticipate it, you're responsible for your own damages because you didn't take the proper precaution. Haya bala korah rishon, u bala chavit acharon. On the other hand, if the bala korah is walking first and the bala chavit after him, nishbar chavit bekorah patur bala korah. If the chavit smashes into the korah, then the bala korah is patur over here because the chavit was the one at fault here. The Baal Korah is walking normally. The Baal Chavit sped up and bumped into him. And that's what the problem is. Ve'im amad Baal Korah. On the other hand, and this is what we quoted earlier in our Gemara, if the Baal Korah stops, chayav, then he's responsible because he stopped in the middle of the Shut Rabim, which he is not permitted to do. Ve'im amar le Baal Chavit amod. If the person carrying the Korah turns around and tells the Baal Chavit, stop, I'm stopping, patur, then he's not responsible because he gave him sufficient warning to stop. And if he doesn't stop in time, then he is the one who is at fault and not the Baal Korah for making that stop in the Rishut Rabim. Now from the Mishnah only deals with two cases. It deals with a case where the Baal Korah is moving. It deals with a case where the Baal Korah is stopped. The case that the Mishnah doesn't deal with, which is an interesting question, is what happens if the Baal Korah slows down. Instead of stopping, he simply slows down, and then because of that, the Baal Chavit bumps into him. Whose responsibility will it be there? That's a discussion amongst the Achronim as to, in those instances, where the problem lies. Is it with the Baal Korah slowing down, or is it with the Baal Chavit not paying attention to the pace of the individuals in front of him? Haya Baal Chavit Rishon, or Baal Korah Acharon. The other hand, if the Baal Chavit is walking first, and the Baal Korah is following behind him, Nishbara Chavit B'Korah, and the Chavit is damaged by the Korah that's coming up from behind, Chayav, the Baal Korah is responsible because he didn't take proper precautions to stop his Korah from running into the guy that's in front of him. The Baal Chavit is doing normal behavior, normal speeds in front of him. If he goes and then his Korah goes straight into the guy in front of him, he's responsible for that damage. V'imamad Baal Chavit. Now then, if the Baal Chavit comes to a sudden stop, or for whatever reason needs to adjust and stop, then he is patur, the Baal Korah is patur, because he didn't have sufficient warning that the Baal Chavit was going to stop in the middle of the Rishut Rabim. The Baya Tosafot add an additional dimension over here and suggests Dinar Charon Yachol La'ain Ba'oto Shalech Lefanav Kol Sha'a. The guy who's walking behind can't pay 100% attention to the person in front of him. The Kach Kilo Havya Korah Kishilda Yesh La'Charon Lelechet B'tchilat Hilucho B'idach Gisa. For that reason, when the Bala Korah was in front of him, is not taking up the entire street, and it offers the option of the Bala Chavit to move to the side. And therefore, if the Bala Korah would stop suddenly, or something would happen, he'd have a way to avoid it because he'd be out of the way, then we obligate him to do that. But on the other hand, in the case where the Bala Korah is taking up the whole area, and the Bala Chavit has no choice ella to be behind him, in that case, we're going to make the Bala Korah Chayav or responsible when he stops short, then the Bala Chavit gets damaged by that. And so for that reason, there isn't a distinction that you could draw between the Chavit being in front or the Korah being in front, because both of the instances are either the person in front is taking up the whole space and you have no choice except to be behind them, or they're not taking up the whole space and you have an option to be slightly skewed away from them so that if something happens suddenly, you won't end up in a altercation with the person in front of you. If you have that option, then we're going to say you're responsible to take up that option. If something happens afterwards, you're going to be responsible because you didn't take up that option. On the other hand, if your only alternative is to be behind, whether it's the Chavit or whether it's behind the Korah, in that instance, you're stuck. And because you're walking behind them and you can't 100% of the time pay attention to what they're doing, if they suddenly stop without giving warning to the person behind them, they are going to be responsible for the damage that is done. If the Bala Chavit warns the Bala Korah behind him, Chayav, then the Bala Korah is responsible because he was given warning to stop and he didn't stop. And obviously, he'd have to leave sufficient room between them so that he has time to break. Just like by cars, you have to leave sufficient space between the cars so that if the car in front of you stops and his brake lights go on and give you a warning that he's stopping, then you have to have sufficient time and space to stop. And similarly here, the Bala Korah has to have that same situation or setup. And the din is also true, or the similar thing would be true if one guy is coming with the fire and one guy is coming with the flax, and obviously if the fire and the flax get together, it's going to burn up the flax and create a large fire. The same is true as the examples that we give in the Mishnah, the same din as to culpability, liability over here is what we saw by the Bala Korah and the Bala Chavit, as to who is in front, who's in back, who has rights to be there, who doesn't have rights to be there. All of those will play into the scenario to determine who is responsible for the fire that develops from them coming into contact with each other. Now, obvious from this Mishnah, which is much more explicit in the Yerushalmi, and the Yerushalmi itself deals with this in a much more detailed level, is that you have to establish rules of the road. And the rules of the road give right of way to certain parties at certain times or in certain circumstances. And that's exactly what the Yerushalmi discusses. Who has the right of way? Who has the rights to make decisions in certain circumstances? And given that they have precedence or that they are the right of way, then the other parties will be responsible if something happens. On the other hand, if you don't have the right of way and you go ahead and you act in that manner that causes damage, then you will be held responsible. But it's the same as driving on the streets today or the modern day rules of cars and the courtesy and the expectations of who has the right of way and who should go first. And if an accident happens, then we have to look at the circumstance and say who had the right of way and who was the one who needed to take more precaution in those cases. So what is true in the modern society was also true in their day. And Yerushalmi lays out those rules of the road in order to determine who is the posheya or the liable party because they violated the rules of the road. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Gemara on the top of Lamed Bet, Amud Aleph.